here, Inspector Pirbright.
Thank you, Mr. Amis.
I imagine you need somewhere to set up a base for your inquiries. I'm afraid I can only offer you Mr. Hatch's office. The large desk is Mr. Hatch's, of course, and this is mine over here.
I'll sit at yours, if I may. I think I find the size of Mr. Hatch's desk rather awe-inspiring.
Please, feel free to use whatever you need. This is a dreadful, terrible thing, Inspector.
Indeed it is, Mr. Amis. Oh, I think you've met Detective Sergeant Love.
Mr. Amis?
Yes, under rather happier circumstances. If you'll excuse me, Inspector, I'd better get back to the staff. We're all in a state of shock at the moment. I'm sure you'll understand.
Of course.
Mr. Hatch was a very popular boss. Wonderful, in fact, and, well, to be murdered like that, it just doesn't seem... And in such a horrible way. I'm not usually squeamish, but...
Yes, a shotgun at close range is a particularly messy and indiscriminate weapon.
Is that what it was?
Naturally, there'll be a forensic expert along to make an examination shortly, but I'd be very surprised if he reached any other conclusion. There's the broken washroom window, too, where the muzzle was rammed through the glass. I imagine he was shaving at the time.
Most likely. He usually had a freshen up at about 10 o'clock. He said it gave him his second wind to stay chipper until the early hours when the gaming room closes. Of course, we closed it at once as soon as he was found. Though we didn't let anybody leave the premises.
Very thoughtful of you. We'll need to get names and addresses, statements where relevant. There seem to have been some unusual goings-on here tonight, quite apart from the tragedy of Mr. Hatch.
Indeed there have, Inspector. I was in the gaming room all evening, and then this. So I haven't had time to get to the bottom of it. But it seems that the medieval banquet, one of our more popular attractions, you know, was invaded by hooligans. Dressed as Vikings, from what I can discover so far.
Yes, I just put my head round the door. It looked rather like the aftermath of Belshazzar's feast. Quite a lot of the guests seemed to be unconscious and wearing costume.
I believe the Vikings, whoever they may have been, distributed all the liquor from the store and the guests took full advantage.
Didn't you hear anything unusual? From the gaming room, I mean.
There are several sets of padded doors between the two activities. Gambling people insist on quiet, you see.
Yes, I suppose they would.
And even if I had heard something, I wouldn't have been surprised. The banquets get pretty rowdy at times, especially when there's a Darby and Joan club in, as there was tonight. But, well, if you'll excuse me.
Just a couple of things before you go, Mr. Amis, if you wouldn't mind.
Yes, Inspector?
We had a conversation only hours ago about a threat to Mr. Hatch's life.
I know. I kept reminding him of your warning to take it seriously, but he wouldn't listen.
The threat, though, as I'm sure you remember, had come from America. That's to say, the letter was posted there in New York.
Yes.
Now I learn that there are two Americans, the smartly dressed young men I saw in the kitchen, I imagine, actually working here.
Ah, Julian and Bernard. They're from a firm of management consultants. It is an American firm, and Julian and Bernard do their best to deliver the jargon of their trade in the language of its birthplace. I don't believe, however, that they're any more American than you or I. Probably from Slough or Melton Mowbray, if the truth were known.
I see. And have they been staying here?
In one of the chalets.
That would explain why we were unaware of their presence in the town. We've been rather keeping an eye out for Americans. I get the feeling you're not keen on them.
I regarded them as surplus to requirements even before they arrived. Their presence has done nothing to convince me otherwise. I pleaded with Mr. Hatch not to waste his money. You couldn't find a shrewder businessman than he is. Oh, dear. Was anywhere in the country. I didn't feel they had anything to teach him, that's all.
But he engaged them all the same.
We all have our weaknesses. Mr. Hatch's was status symbols. Other businessmen in his acquaintance had used these people, and he didn't want to be thought inferior.
I see. You were very close to Mr. Hatch?
I think so. Well, I like to think so. Well, we're chalk and cheese, really. Totally different backgrounds and education, but, well, he's treated me as a sort of protégé, and rough diamond that he may have been, I've learned far more from him than I ever picked up from university. I don't know what I shall do now. For the time being, I feel it's up to me to try and keep the ship afloat. Do what I can for Mrs. Hatch. I'm sure it's what he would have wanted.
I'm sure you're right, Mr. Amis. Tell me, do you have any theory as to who might have been behind this, the murder? At our previous conversation, he wouldn't own to any known enemies.
Councillor Crispin.
Pardon?
I'm sorry. Perhaps I shouldn't just blurt out a name like that, but... Well, I don't know if Mr. Hatch was telling the truth when he said he had no enemies in America, but he certainly has an enemy here. Councillor Crispin. It was mutual, of course. And I don't know when or how it began. It goes back for years, long before I came on the scene.
But do you seriously mean to suggest that a man in Harry Crispin's position, a town councillor, commodore of the yacht club, would consider...
I don't honestly know what I'm saying just now, Inspector, and I beg you to make allowances for my state of shock. I'm being frank, probably at the expense of fairness.
I'm grateful for your frankness, and naturally that avenue of inquiry will be pursued. Now, I know you're anxious to get back to the staff, and I've kept you too long as it is.
Thank you. I shall be at hand if you want me. The girl on the switchboard will take any calls for you and put them through here.
You think of everything. Very shortly, it would be a good idea if Sergeant Love came through and began to interview the staff in order to find out what happened at the banquet. I shall stay in here. I've sent a car for Mrs. Hatch, and I'd better talk to her first.
Of course. Just come through, Sergeant, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, sir. He's an obliging chap.
Yes. I can see why Hatch valued him so highly. He seems pretty certain about Harry Crispin being behind it.
Mm.
Your search of the river, Sid. I hadn't a chance to ask you earlier. Did you come across anything that might have been used to sink Crispin's yacht? Anything to indicate that Hatch was responsible?
I think I found the very thing itself, sir.
Well, go on.
A fausty old beam, about 10 foot long, out of a barn or a warehouse. All rotted and sodden, but with a regular crocodile's teeth of rusty bolts and nails sticking out of it. It had drifted downstream a bit and got struck. There was fishing line attached to either end of it. I'd say that was it.
What did you do with it?
Well, what could I do with it? That was on my own, sir. I couldn't shift it. So I took a set of photos of it.
Well done, lad. Well?
Well, Gov?
Where are they?
Oh, I took them to the chemist. They'll be ready on Saturday.
Said!
Well, what else could I do? We don't have anybody at the station who knows anything about developing photographs.
True. Never mind. We'll follow that up later. Now, first of all, Sid, go round the outside and see what you can find before anybody gets trampling about.
Ah, right. Go and check for footprints in the flower beds, eh?
Now, to begin with, I think you'll find it's gravel, an unpromising material. And has there ever really existed a murderer so considerate as to prance around on a flower bed?
Right, Gov. Oh, morning, sir.
Sergeant. Now then, Squire, where's the doings?
Ah, how nice to see you again, Mr...
Warlock.
Warlock, of course. How are you?
Great, Squire, absolutely great.
It's been a long time.
I'll say that body in a bath business, dissolved in acid. Very tasty case, that.
Yes.
So, what you got for me this time, then? Something juicy, I hope. Where is it?
Next door. I'd be glad if you waited outside in the passage for just a few minutes. I'm expecting the widow, so just till she is safely passed and in here.
Righto, Squire, no sweat. You can always depend on me for tact and discretion. Well, then, at least we're not pumping the drains out this time, eh?
Hmm?
A corpse in solution is always harder to track down than one in the flesh, no matter how mangled about it might be.
Here we are, Guff. I found it straight away. Probably against the wall outside. I wrapped it in paper for the prints.
Well done. Not that there'll be any, of course, but... very nice. A choice fowling piece. Not the murderers, of course. He wouldn't have ditched £1,000 worth of gun.
Crikey.
It's probably his own, Hatch's. His wife should know. When I've seen her, Sid, Fairclough can drive her back home. Tell him to find a neighbour to stay with her.
Right.
That the suspected murder weapon, is it? Yeah. Could make a nice old mess with that at short range. Right old mangling, that'd... evening, madam.
Mrs. Hatch, Inspector.
Ah, come in, Mrs. Hatch. Do sit down. Righto then, Mr. Warlock.
Squire, I'll go in and have a shufty. Let you know the verdict, eh? Be good.
Can I bring you anything, Mrs. Hatch? I could get you a cup of tea, or would you like something stronger?
Thank you, Edmund, but I'm perfectly all right. You've got your work cut out as it is, but I know I can depend on you.
I'll leave you then. I shall be on call.
Thank you, Edmund. Well, Inspector.
I have to tell you that your husband was killed with a shotgun. He must have died immediately, perhaps quite unaware of what had happened. I have the gun here. I want you to look at it and tell me if you've seen it before. Would you mind?
Of course not. It's Arnie's.
You're sure?
Oh, yes. Positive. He bought it last year to go shooting. It's a very good gun. He had to go to London for it.
Mrs. Hatch... Did you know that your husband had received a letter threatening his life?
I most certainly did not. Who would do a thing like that?
Oh, we don't know. But the letter came from America.
America?
Just one more question for now, Mrs. Hatch. Forget the letter. Just tell me if you know of anyone, anyone at all, whom your husband might have considered an enemy.
Tonight, Inspector, more than £870 worth of very high-quality liquid refreshment was stolen from the club stockroom and handed out gratis to all and sundry by a gang of hooligans. If that isn't the work of an enemy, I don't know what is.
A very rapid bit of calculating, Mrs. Hatch. And have you any idea who might have been responsible?
Oh, certainly. The same gentleman who's been waging a vendetta. And that's what it is, a vendetta against me and poor Arnie for a long time. He's behind it, all right. Counsellor, so-called Counsellor Harry Crispin. And her as well, of course. But that goes without saying.
Mrs. Crispin?
Mrs. Crispin?
Right now. I'm just trying to get a picture of what happened, and I hope that the two of you might be able to help me...
I can tell you what happened, Sergeant. Why, up to the minute when some bastard hit me over the head, and all I saw after that were wee stars, and then... blackness. And when I came to, all the lights had been smashed out and I set off to find the big man. Well, I found him right enough. With half his head blown off.
But, oh, Mr. Hatch. Poor Mr. Hatch.
Oh, will you shut up your keening, girl?
Well, let's start at the beginning, shall we?
I'm trying to tell you if you shut your gobo, Ile. It was just another friggin' banquet, wasn't it? I'm doing my court jester bit in this daft outfit, trying to make the bastard shut up their row and listen to me jokes. And I just got to the one about the monk and the Mother Superior when these fellas busted in at every door, all got up in these horned helmets they were, waving swords and battle axes. But for a moment I thought, maybe the big man had put in a new gimmick into the show and forgot to tell me when... they start smashing the crockery and chucking the band off your minstrel's gallery.
I see. And where were you when this happened, Miss...
Hyacinth.
Hyacinth.
I was just bending over a table, dishing out the oranges.
I see. And is that the dress you were wearing at the time?
Aye, it's medieval.
And you say you were bending over in that dress?
Oh, aye. We bend over a lot in this job. I mean, that's show business, isn't it?
Yeah.
Any road... I were bent over at table and I suddenly got grabbed from behind. Now, I knew, straight away, as it weren't the usual sort of grab.
Usual?
Well, by the time we take the oranges round, they're all pretty pie-eyed and past caring, and you can never bend over next to a fellow without, well, you know...
But this was different.
Oh, I'll say. I mean, I heard this big shout and some screams, but I couldn't get up to look because I were off balance trying to catch a satsuma, and then these hands... big hands grabbed me and dragged me off table and swore me across a flipping room. Before I knew what were happening, there were these Vikings all over the shop. They ripped me penny off and tied me to a trolley with strings. I saw as they locked some of the other Nellies in big cupboard. And then, with me helpless, they went round smashing everything inside.
What were the guests doing?
They were loving it, weren't they? They thought it were part of the show. Any case, these Vikings had obviously been through liquor store on their way in, and they were dishing out full bottles to every guest. Everything. Cherry brandy, Grand Marnier, Southern Comfort, everything.
I took on a dozen, mind. I must have kicked three in the wooden tackle before they could get the grips from me. Well, then I knotted two in the chops for some cowardly bastard hit me over the head with a steel or similar.
And the guests still thought it was part of the show?
Well, them OAPs... don't know what day it is when they're sober, most of them. Ah. Well, they were well away already. A couple of swigs out of them bottles of spirits they'd been given, they were going madder than Vikings, smashing glasses, chucking plates and goblets up at the chandeliers till there weren't a light left. By the time I got myself undone from trolley, it was pitch dark, save for a light through the door, and it were all quiet. Vikings vanished as fast as they come. Though I think they took a few at Nellie's with them. And all guests were passing out, or unconscious... I let the other Nellies out at cupboard and somebody went to fetch Mr. Amos from gaming room and we all met up in kitchen. That's when Juxie went off and found... oh, poor Mr. Hatch! Oh, you were a wonderful man. He could be quite kind sometimes.
Do you agree with that, Mr. Juxie?
He was a proper bastard.
I see.
He'd cut your throat if you'd a penny piece stuck in it.
So you didn't like him?
I thought the world of him. I admire that in a man. Grit, selfishness, greed. You know where you are with a man like that.
Yes. I imagine you would.
A dreadful end, Mr. Pirbright. Dreadful. What a savage thing to do.
Savage indeed, sir. Or desperate.
Desperate?
Taking a shotgun to a man is an especially violent and brutal act. It is a weapon of terror, sir. That's why it's so much favoured by gangsters on the one hand and by those of strong religious convictions on the other.
I do not think that you need to go any further in these speculations, Mr. Pirbright. As you somewhat superfluously point out, the shotgun is traditionally associated with gangsters. A known gangster was in this place tonight. His associates had earlier given warning of an intended crime. You know your own business best, no doubt, but I must say I expected to see more obvious effort being made to trace this man before he can do any more damage.
I'm sorry, sir. I hadn't realised that you thought Tudor was responsible for the shooting.
Well, damn it all, of course I do. What else do you expect?
You're perfectly right, sir, to challenge my perhaps too ready acceptance of Tudor's innocence.
Hmm.
Now then, sir, reasons. This Tudor, or Tudidoo, is undeniably a very wicked fellow, as you say, sir. In the days of Prohibition, he was a professional murderer, so professional, indeed, that he succeeded in avoiding indictment, let alone conviction, during the whole of the bootlegging era. He has no record, only a history. And the fact that it's tinged with mythology, he is believed, for instance, to have had a hand in the St. Valentine's Day massacre in Chicago, is testimony to the high regard in which Mr. Tudor is held in his own country. However, he is no longer a criminal in the executive sense, having moved, like so many of his successful colleagues, into the fields of administration and patronage. Our information is that Mr. Tudor's political influence is considerable, though not overt. He is listed, for example, as one of the vice presidents of the Nixonian Institute of Public Welfare.
Really?
You may well be wondering what such a man is doing here at all. We shall have the opportunity of asking him in person before much longer. I had word half an hour ago that the officer who had been keeping him under observation was waiting for him to regain consciousness.
Consciousness? I hope there's no question of force.
No, sir. The man's simply asleep, that's all. The submission I wanted to make, though, is that no one in Tudor's position, with all his achievements and advantages, is going to be so mad as to come all this way and risk exchanging Miami or San Clemente or wherever these people live their good life for our Lincoln jail.
Oh, very well, then. If this Sicilian fellow didn't shoot Hatch, perhaps you can tell me who did.
Alas, no, sir.
Ah.
Mrs. Hatch says that Councillor Henry Crispin shot her husband. Mr. Amis agrees with her.
Good grief!
There has been a good deal of acrimony between them for some time, sir. Almost a feud, in fact.
Yes, but murder!
I agree, sir. I fancy Mrs. Hatch was overwrought. It would be understandable in the circumstances. But Mr. Amis...
I met Mr. Amis on my way in. He seems a thoroughly dependable sort of fellow. Good breeding, I'd say, and sound judgment. But Councillor Crispin, murder.
Come in.
Excuse me, sir. We've arrested a bloke who was trying to hide in a cupboard along the corridor there, sir. He's dressed as a Viking. That's to say, he's got nothing on but his boots and a kind of dogskin thing and a helmet with cow's horns on it. And he's got an axe with him, but he's not violent or anything. Says he's missed his bus.
What could be more natural?
Brevet says he's seen the bloke before. He's one of the attendants in that amusement park called Brocklestone.
Crispin's amusement park?
And some of the girls, too. Some of them say they recognised other fellas from the same place. That's how they were so good at jumping from table to table, the girls said. They're from the Dodgem cars.
All right, Sergeant. You'd better take a statement from this man. We particularly want to know who recruited him and gave the instructions. If he's forthcoming, don't bother to charge him with anything we can do without complications of that kind at the moment.
Oh, and there's one of the flowers, or Nellie's, we found in one of those chalets round the back.
Oh?
She was with... Well, begging your pardon, Mr. Chubb. She was with the chief planning officer.
Good Lord.
Dear me.
She said she was just turning the beds down, and he said he was taking some measurements to do with a planning application, he said.
Sure, Insid. What have you done with the chief planning officer?
I let him go, sir. Seeing who he was. But I said you'd be no doubt be round his house to have a word with him.
Well done, Sid. That should keep him on hot bricks for a day or two.
Oh, really, Mr. Pirbright? Councillor Crispin, Member of the Chamber of Commerce, and a Mason as our principal suspect, and now the Chief Planning Officer in flagrante delicto. What are we going to?
What indeed, sir? You don't mind, Chief Constable, if I see this young lady?
Oh, well, no, of course not.
Miss Wilkinson, sir.
Pay no attention to me, Mr. Pirbright. Please carry on as if I were not here.
Now, Janice, love, come and sit down, will you? There you are. Or, on your badge, is it Daisy?
I know, it's confusing, isn't it? Now, you see, my real name is Janice Wilkinson. But here at the club, we all have flower names, and we're always called them by staff and customers alike. It's a rule, do you see, that we're all called after flowers, and we're dressed as flowers.
Yeah.
Mr. Hatchie likes flower names because it gives the club a nicer tone. But, well, is it true about Mr. Hatch?
I'm afraid so.
Oh, dear, fancy.
How old are you, Janice?
Daisy! Oh.
Daisy.
How old?
Yes.
Well, 19. I mean, I know I look younger, but...
You like club work, do you?
Oh, hi. Oh, it's super smashing. You never know what you'll be doing next. I want to be a bunny, though.
A bunny?
In a bunny club.
Yes.
Where's your home, Daisy?
Well, my mum and dad live in Chelmsbury. I'm in Diggs here with the other girls, though.
But you were found tonight in one of the chalets.
Well, I was just going to bed.
You were with a gentleman?
Oh, no. He was just measuring the chalet. I don't know why.
I see. Mr. Hatch has let you stay in one of the chalets occasionally, has he?
Oh, well, when we've been working late.
And the other girls?
Well, them too, now and then.
When they're working late?
Well, it's a long way out, isn't it? Oh, I say, talk about long way out. These petals are forever dropping down. Oh, oops a daisy.
Yes, Chief Constable, was there a question?
No, please, carry on, Miss Fabret.
Of course, the motel isn't properly finished yet, not licensed, in fact, right?
Well, that's right, yeah.
How did you come to take this job, Daisy?
Well, a friend of mine worked here, and I wanted to do modelling in them days, and my friend said that she sometimes did modelling here. So I came along and asked Mr. Hatch, and he said, yeah, I think I can use you, and...
And do you do modelling?
Well, sort of.
Now, I want you to think carefully about all your other friends here, the other flowers. Are any of them girls from other countries?
What, foreigners, you mean?
They're all English, are they? You're sure?
Of course, I'm sure. Well, except Heather's Scotch and Rose's a Brum, but they're all from round here. Mostly from grammar school.
Good Lord!
Mr. Chubb is a governor of the grammar school.
Oh, that's nice.
I suppose none of them has made mention at any time of having been in a convent.
A what do you say?
A convent. A nunnery.
Oh, I shouldn't think so. I mean, what would they be doing in a place like that?
What indeed? Thank you, Daisy.
Oh, you're welcome.
Would you ask Sergeant Love? You can't miss him. He's just outside.
Oh, I know, Sergeant Love.
Do you?
Oh, he's brought me in here just now. Oh, he's smashing. Do you know, all girls are going crackers over him.
Fancy. Well, would you ask him to bring in Mr. Tudor, please?
Oh, righto.
I'm learning that there was a side to the late Mr. Hatch's business, which is far from creditable.
I'm regretfully coming round to that view myself, sir. Come in.
Joseph Tudor, sir.
Alias Turidoo.
Come in, Mr. Tudor. This is Mr. Chubb, the Chief Constable, and I'm Inspector Pirbright. I wonder if we might see your passport.
Oh, hell, what are you... Oh.
Thank you. It's Cardinal Wolsey, isn't it?
Huh?
Your outfit.
The hell is like. It's medieval.
Ah.
I wonder, Mr. Tudor, whether you would care to say, as a matter of verifiable fact, whether you are an American or an Italian citizen.
What the hell? I thought you constables had to do reading and writing. Can't you read your own goddamn language?
There's really no call for you to adopt that sort of tone.
Ah, the hell with you. I gotta go.
I'm sorry, sir, but I must ask you to bear with us for a while longer. The inquiries regarding your passport will be made with the least possible delay.
Oh, Santa Maria!
As you say, sir. While you're here, I have a number of other questions I wish to put to you, Mr. Tudor. And in fairness, I ought to point out that these questions are part of the investigation we are making into the death, a few hours ago, of the owner of this club.
Oh, what do you... Oh, gee, the guy got hit then, huh?
He did indeed.
Oh, mademoiselle, crotte no kissono, God, so it's too bad.
Why have you come to England?
Well, maybe I go for this Middle Ages crap, and maybe I do some business here.
The East Anglian olive crop?
Oh, wise guy, huh?
I gather that you do not wish to tell me the real reason for your presence in Flaxborough.
He gathers. This guy, he gathers.
Where are you staying, sir?
This Roebuck Arms joint, your village inn, I guess.
An officer will drive you there, sir, so that you may collect what things you need before he takes you on.
On where?
To the village lock-up, sir.
Well,
no use looking under your left arm, sir. One of our men took the liberty of removing your gun while you were asleep. We shall, of course, be interested to know if you have a permit to carry such a weapon in this country, but once you're settled into the cells, we'll have all the time in the world, won't we?
And you see, Mr. Tudor, falsification of passport information is a very serious... oh, yes.
Right, Sergeant Love.
Sir?
Get the lads to drive Mr. Tullido to his hotel and onto the station.
Get me my consul, but quick.
Such matters are attended to by a delegated officer at the police station and will be in hand as soon as you've taken up residence. I imagine your own attorney would understand if you sought advice from a local man on this occasion, would he not?
Oh, he imagines. Gathering ain't enough, so now he imagines. He talks so pretty I could cry.
Off we go then, sir.
And you still mean to say, Inspector, that you rule out that dreadful fellow as the murderer of poor Hatch?
Without hesitation, sir. I don't have a picture of who we're looking for yet. Councillor Crispin is certainly the most likely suspect, and will have to be investigated forthwith. But he may simply be the one who's taken out the contract.
Of course.
No. Tudor, or Tudidu, isn't the assassin, I'm sure of that. I feel that our murderer is a very different kettle of fish altogether.
And tomorrow, perhaps we'll find out about the Blessed Naked Nuns too. It's the final chapter, so I really hope so. And in today's episode, you heard John Rowe, Paul Downing, Daniel Cole, Patricia Wilcock, Robin Polly, Catherine Hunt, Geoffrey Banks, Sally Whittaker, and David Fleischman. It was written by Colin Watson and dramatised by Christopher Dennis.